and cried, "Oh, why can't you remain like this forever?"
This was all that passed between them on the subject. But henceforth, Wendy knew that she must grow up. You always know after you are two. Two is the beginning of the end. Of course, they lived at 14, and until Wendy came, her mother was the chief one. She was a lovely lady, with a romantic mind and such a sweet, mocking mouth. Her romantic mind was like the tiny boxes, one within the other, that come from the puzzling East. However many you discover, there is always one more. And her sweet, mocking mouth had one kiss on it that Wendy could never get, though there it was, perfectly conspicuous, in the right-hand corner. The way Mr. Darling won her was this. The many gentlemen who had been boys when she was a girl discovered simultaneously that they loved her, and they all ran to her house to propose to her except Mr. Darling, who took a cab and nipped in first, and so he got her. He got all of her, except the innermost box and the kiss. He never knew about the box, and in time he gave up trying for the kiss. Wendy thought Napoleon could have got it, but I can picture him trying and then going off in a passion, slamming the door. Mr. Darling used to boast to Wendy that her mother not only loved him but respected him. He was one of those deep ones who knew about stocks and shares. Of course, no one really knows, but he quite seemed to know, and he often said stocks were up and shares were down in a way that would have made any woman respect him. Mrs. Darling was married in white, and at first she kept the books perfectly, almost gleefully, as if it were a game. Not so much as a Brussels sprout was missing. But by and by, whole cauliflowers dropped out, and instead of them, there were pictures of babies without faces. She drew them when she should have been totting up. They were Mrs. Darling's guesses. Wendy came first, then John, then Michael. For a week or two after Wendy came, it was doubtful whether they would be able to keep her, as she was another mouth to feed. Mr. Darling was frightfully proud of her, but he was very honourable, and he sat on the edge of Mrs. Darling's bed, holding her hand and calculating expenses, while she looked at him imploringly. She wanted to risk it, come what might, but that was not his way. His way was with a pencil and a piece of paper, and if she confused him with suggestions, he had to begin at the beginning again. "Now, don't interrupt," he would beg of her. "I have £1.17 here, and to insist at the office, I can cut off my coffee at the office, say 10 shillings, making 2, 9, and 6. With your 18 and 3, makes 3, 9, 7. With 5, 0, 0 in my checkbook, makes 8, 9, 7. Who is that moving? 8, 9, 7, dot and carry 7. Don't speak, my own. And the pound you lent to that man who came to the door. Quiet, child. Dot and carry. Child, there you've done it. Did I say 997? Yes, I said 997. The question is, can we try it for a year on 997?
Of course we can, George, she cried. But she was prejudiced in Wendy's favour, and he was really the grander character of the two.
Remember mumps, he warned her, almost threateningly, and off he went again. Mumps, £1. That is what I have put down, but I dare say it will be more like 30 shillings, but don't speak. Measles, 1 5. German measles, 1/2 guinea. Makes 2, 15, 6. Don't waggle your finger. Whooping cough, say 15 shillings. And so on it went, and it added up differently each time. But at last, Wendy just got through, with mumps reduced to 12 6, and the two kinds of measles treated as one. There was the same excitement over John, and Michael had even a narrower squeak. But both were kept, and soon you might have seen the three of them going in a row to Miss Folsom's kindergarten school, accompanied by their nurse. Mrs. Darling loved to have everything just so, and Mr. Darling had a passion for being exactly like his neighbours. So, of course, they had a nurse. As they were poor, owing to the amount of...